Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. On today's program, a look at the past, present, and the future. We'll talk about the Civil War era letters of a man in love whose name was Love. But first, a woman whose past held out little hope, but whose future is filled with promise. Her name is Chantel Fisher. She has just graduated from UMSL with honors and will continue her education at Washington University on a scholarship. None of this seemed likely a few years ago when Chantel was a prison inmate. Her story is a classic example of putting a damaged life back together and what it takes to do so. Chantel Fisher joins me in studio. Pleasure to meet you, Chantel.
Thank you for having me, Don.
Congratulations to you on all you've accomplished. I mean, you've done a great job with more to come, I'm sure.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'd like to begin by talking about the part of your life before you changed it. Fill us in on what it was like and what your problems were.
Well, from a very young age, I wasn't raised to break the law. I wasn't raised to do the wrong thing. I was just always a free-spirited young girl and always wanted to do what I wanted to do, and that eventually led me to make some bad choices. It wasn't really the people that I hung around. It was just that I just, for some reason, had this love for money, and I had always been smart, and so I figured out this plan that to get money. And so on and on, it would grow and it would grow. Once you get into it, it's not like you can easily get out of it. And so it just held me captive for so long. And eventually that led me to prison and to drugs. And between the two, I couldn't break the cycle. I would go to prison. I would get out. I would start back using drugs. And of course, I would start back with my criminal activity, wind up back in prison, back out, back on drugs, back in criminal activity. And it just became a vicious cycle in my life. And the person that was hurt the most by it was my daughter. At the time, I had a daughter when I was 15, very young. Like I said, very free-spirited, wanted to do what I wanted to do. My mom didn't raise me, oh, it's okay to have a baby at 15. It was just a decision that I made for my life. And so for over 20 years of my life, as well as my daughter's life, I was basically in and out of prison, in and out of prison. And it was the last time that I went to prison that I made a decision that I'm sick of myself. This is it. And I'm not going to waste another day of my life or my family's life in prison.
You know, the pattern that you've just described is one that I've heard before. Mm-hmm. It's not a unique pattern mm-hmm. among young people, particularly in some areas of our city and some areas of our country. You agree with that?
I do. Yeah. I do. But they're challenged with having the support that they need, the real support, not the judgmental support. Like, people will come in and say, well, I'm going to help you, but they want to lay the plan out. But what helped me was when people just began to say, how can I help you? You know, you tell me what you need.
Well, who were those people?
One couple was a pastor and his wife, Reverend Jordan, William Jordan, and Sister Nancy Jordan. They have a church, Divine Fellowship, and they do prison ministry. Mm-hmm. And so from like 1997, I would go to their Bible study, and they wouldn't judge me. They would just minister God's love to me, and they would pray for me. I could write them. They'd write me back, and they sent any kind of support that they could through cards and things like that, just to let me know that they were praying for me, that if I needed anything, they were there. And then when I got out, and I hadn't even made a decision to change yet, because I still went back one more time after that. But it was the last time that I remembered the love that they showed me.
So how many times were you actually incarcerated?
A total of seven.
Whoa.
Right. A total of seven.
And you said it was basically because of your love for money. Can you be a little more specific as to what the crime was?
It was basically, for most of the time, it was just I would open these different accounts. I would get different names. I didn't steal people's identity. I would create different identities because, as I said, I was always a very bright young girl. I just used my knowledge for the wrong purposes. And so I would create identities, and I would use those identities to open accounts and then defraud the companies out of the money.
One of the early identity thieves,
yes.
I guess.
But not really identity, because it wasn't a person
you made
per
up
se.
It was as a,
yes.
an identity you made.
Yes.
How many years ago was this?
When I first started, yeah. My first time that I was arrested was in 1986 mm-hmm. when I was 17.
So I'm not going to do any math. Right. I'm not going to embarrass you by doing that. And then 7 times you were incarcerated
for basically the same crime.
When you were undergoing this transformation and meeting with your friends from the ministry, was there like an aha moment that, or was this an evolution where you decided you were going to change your
life?
It
was an evolution. It was the last time. It was June 9th, 2006. About a year prior to that, I had been in a tragic car accident where my spine was completely crushed.
Oh, wow.
They had to remove one of my ribs and rebuild my back and put a cage in my back. And so when I got out, the rehab. I had to go through rehab to walk and all of that. I still went back to drugs. So when I got arrested on June 9th, 2006, I said, you know what? I'm sick of this and I'm sick of me. And I cried out to God, you know, different things work for different people, but that's what worked for me. And I prayed that day and I asked God, I said, if you can take my life and you can do something with it, you can have it.
What about your relationship with your daughter?
It was always okay. Because her dad made sure that I had a relationship with her. He wasn't the type of dad, and I thank God for her dad that he raised her, and he raised her to be a good woman. Today, she's a wife and a mom, and she's doing well. She lives in Texas. And so until I got out, everything was really good. I thought we had a really good relationship. It's been strained since this transformation, and I thought that our relationship would get better, but that just goes to show that just because you change, the hurt that you've put upon other people is still there.
I have to assume that she nonetheless must be proud of what mom has accomplished.
Yes, she is. But we always had a really good relationship during that time. She was always there in prison, coming to visit, in jail, you know, helping me any way that she could.
Mm. Well, as you indicated earlier on, you're a smart young lady.
Yes.
And that has been proven again and again with your academic achievements. Tell me about the decision to go to school and what pointed you in that direction.
Well, after I did 2.5 years in state prison, this was the last time, from 2006 when I got locked up until December of 2008. And that's what a lot of people don't know is that I really have only been out of prison for 3.5 years. So this has happened all really quickly. And when I was in federal prison, my case manager, she really liked me because I'm a likable person. And I just made a lot of bad choices. And she was like, I was telling her, I want to go to school when I get out. I had contacted Steve Bay, who's an advisor, communication advisor at St. Louis Community College. And I had spoken to him and told him what I wanted to do. And he accepted the call from prison, which shocked me. And he was like, "What? How can I help you, Chantel Fisher?" And so I let him know what I wanted to do when I got out. He said, "Well, I'm going to tell you what." He said, "You get out, you contact me, and then we'll go from there." He said, "I'm not really concerned about where you've been. I'm more concerned about where you're going."
You know, that's one of the great, great lines from your story, yes. By the way. I had read that somewhere.
Yeah, Steve Bay is his name. And he worked for KMOX for many years. He was a news anchor for them or something he did at Channel 2, Fox 2. But I got out and I contacted him, and the rest is history. And he's still there supporting me every step of the way. And I'm just grateful for people like Reverend and Sister Jordan, Steve Bay, my pastor who I have now, my first lady, my friends and family that continue to support me, advisors and professors that, you know, believe in me.
Nobody can do it alone, can they?
Right.
I mean, that's something you certainly found out.
Yes.
What did you decide to study? What direction did you want to take yourself
in? When I got out, I knew I liked radio. You know, I know I like talking. I love
people. I hope someone straightened you out about that.
I like people. So I was like, okay, when I spoke to Steve, he was like, so what do you want to do? And I told him. And he said, let's lay it out. And we laid it out, and I didn't start the first semester on the radio at Flow Valley, but I did start the next semester. And the rest, is, like I said, is history. I finished my degree. The 2-year degree, I did it in 1 year because I'm older, so I don't have as much time as the youngsters have to play around in school, spending 4 years in community college and another 6 in the university. So I did the 2-year program in 1 year, was recognized for my achievements, and received a full academic scholarship to UMSL. And so I was on track there at UMSL to graduate in 2016, but taking extra credit hours here and there, summer classes, winter intercession classes, it pushed me out a year earlier, which was a surprise for me, which is how I was able to graduate this month.
With degrees in education and media.
And a minor in social work.
Oh,
you're... And the Honors College certificate as well.
Sounds like you were fairly busy. Chantel, it sounds like you're in a hurry to get started.
I want to enjoy my degree while I'm still young.
And it's off to WashU in the fall, I take.
Yes.
I take it. What will you be studying there?
I'll do a double major there in social work and divinity. And that's what my plans are.
Where do you plan to take all of this?
Well, a lot of people don't know this either, that I'm an ordained elder at my church, Believers Temple Word Fellowship. And that's the divinity side. And the social work side is what I do through my nonprofit, which is the Soul Fisher Ministries. And quite naturally, it provides tutoring services, free tutoring services for children whose parents are incarcerated or just at-risk children that are struggling academically. And we also provide pre- and post-reentry services for ex-offenders.
Mm-hmm. Well, ultimately, you're going to go out and go into the job market, working mm-hmm. for yourself and your own foundation. Mm-hmm. But you've got a record.
Yes.
How is that going to affect what you do, do you think?
It hasn't affected what I'm doing thus far, but I know that having a felony conviction is the number one challenge for ex-offenders when they come home, which is why our program is to promote higher education for ex-offenders. Because even with a GED or a high school diploma, you really don't have much of a chance as an ex-offender to be anything. You can be a productive member, but you're really going to be stuck in a cycle of poverty.
Yeah. How were you affected when you came out last time from the last time from prison? How did that affect your life? I mean, was it did stigmatize you in any way, preventing you from doing things you wanted to do?
It actually hasn't, and this actually has been the very first time that it has not. But that's because I've been on an academia path. I really haven't applied for a job when I was in the halfway house. Still in the halfway house, because when you come home from federal prison, you always have to go to the halfway house. So I'm enrolled in school. So the Extension has this program called the National Leadership Academy in L.A. So who was my pastor at the time, Pastor Amber Cole, she said that she wanted me to take this class. And so when I get to the class, it's about starting writing like a business proposal. And I'm like, oh, I thought this was just going to teach me how to be a better leader. This is not the class I thought it was going to be. And they was like, oh, no, just stay. So I wrote my plan, which is the Soul Fisher Ministries. And at that time, it wasn't really well received. But I knew that I had prayed and that was what God had given me. So I said, this is what I'm going to go with. And that's how it came about.
Faith is a big part of
it
what
is.
You're all about, I
definitely,
take it. Yeah,
definitely.
Chantel Fisher is our guest. We're talking with her today, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, if you'd like to talk to Chantel, feel free to give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd prefer to send us a tweet, you can do that too at STL On Air. We were talking to Chantel because she is an ex-offender who has really turned her life around, now an honors graduate from UMSL, and she'll be moving on to Washington University this fall on a scholarship. Chantel Fisher in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Chantel Fisher. Chantel, I gather, given your Soul Fisher Foundation, that you probably learned in prison that there are some things you might like to see changed, the way things are done. Prison reform, I think, might be a priority with you, is
definitely, it? Definitely. And finding, as opposed to most of the time, ex-offenders are just categorized into just this group of people. And I think we kind of lose our identity. Like, I have different needs than another ex-offender may have, as opposed to another ex-offender. And I think that's kind of lost in the muck and ruck. And it has also become like profiteering, you know, where they make profits off the prisoners now. So the rehabilitation has kind of been pushed up under the rug. So when you come out, you have all these enormous fines that you need to pay, restitution. You have to pay for your analyses and all these type of things that you have to pay for. But you don't even have a job.
Yeah.
97% of them come home and they don't have a high school credential. So where are they left if they don't have the support of people in the community?
You know, I think I'm right on this, that we have more people incarcerated in this country than any other country in the world, certainly in terms of percentage. Even places like China and
we
North
have more
Korea.
Prisoners in the United States than all other countries combined.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. Did you find that while you were incarcerated that there were fellow prisoners who probably should not have been there?
Definitely. Especially people that have like mental illnesses. Prison has become like a mental institution. Like, you know, you can just speak with them and know that they really didn't know what they were doing when they were breaking the law, and that they should be someplace where they're getting the mental help that they need as opposed to just serving time in prison and the state collecting the money off of them.
There's a lot of thought today that, you know, a lot of people probably should be dealt with in different ways. I'm not talking about people with mental issues now, but that there are victimless crimes, for instance, in which we toss people away when that might not be necessary. Are you among that group?
Definitely. Yeah. I was never offered an alternative from 17. I'm still a kid. Yeah. At 17, I was shuffled off to prison because in the state's eyes, I'm an adult. But in my mind, I'm still a child. You know, I can't do certain things until I'm 18 or 21, but I can go to prison at 17, or I can even go to prison at 14 if I'm certified as an adult. And then they'll take my life. They'll give me a life sentence at 14 or even 12. And then where is my life when I get out 30 years later? What do I know?
Yeah. I've heard it said that for a lot of people, being sent to prison is like being sent to graduate school. If they are bent on a life of crime, they're going to learn how to do it better if
exactly.
you are in prison. Do you agree with that?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's just a place of crime in and of itself. There's crime that goes on inside the prison. And you send a young person in there as opposed to finding an alternative for them, and then they come out far worse than they went in. You know,
what can be done about that?
More reentry services, more alternative sentencing programs. But in order for those to begin to take place or to be recognized for what they really are, it has to be some policies changed concerning ex-offenders, as opposed to just saying, nope, we're going to throw the book at them. There needs to be some laws that are actually changed and enacted that are designed to help, as opposed to just victimize them.
Is your Soul Fisher Foundation something that could work on that?
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's what we try to identify, the individual needs that an ex-offender may need, and then put them in connection with people that can provide those specific needs. Because I don't need daycare provided for me because I don't have a small child. But another mom that comes home, daycare may be the one thing standing in the way of her getting a job. Because when a mom comes home and she has three kids, the family is just glad she's home. They're tired of babysitting. They've had the kids for 2, 3, 5 years. They want the mom to get the kids.
You ever watch Orange is the New Black?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
It's not really realistic.
Okay. Let's leave that for another time and go to the phones. I'd like to bring in Sharon. She's calling from St. Louis. Sharon, go ahead. You're on the air with Chantel Fisher.
Okay. Good evening. Good afternoon to both of you all. Hi, Chantel.
Hi, Sister Sharon.
Hi. I just had to call in because this phenomenal woman, I only have known her for maybe 6 or 7 months or so because we do go to the same church, believe it's simple. But after I had heard her story, I'm a foster parent and I take care of children. One of my kids' parents, father is serving time in prison, and he hadn't had a conversation with his dad in years. So we approached Chantel, and we shared our story with her, and I don't know what she did, but within, I want to say within 24 hours, we had gotten a call from prison, and some connections were made that now my son is able to speak to his dad. So she truly is a woman of her word, and she's giving back every chance she can. And she is just a phenomenal woman, and I'm glad that I have had the pleasure of knowing her, meeting her, and, you know, just I love her to death.
Sharon, I'll thank you for the call, and I'm sure that Chantel wants to do the same.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Anything you want to say to Sharon, for that.
Thanks for calling in, Sharon. You know I love you, too, and I'm glad that they're connected. And I asked, actually, I saw him last night, and I said, are you still talking to your dad and communicating?
Really?
He was like, yes, I am. I need to write him another letter.
It's got to make
it. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. of your connection, and whatever you did, you made some contact. They are in touch, and that's huge. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. It's got to make you feel good to have affected a life or lives like that. Another call here. Ed will join us. Ed, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon. I just want to tell you and the guests that this is a phenomenal story, and I'm just glad that she shared it today because it can have such an impact on people's lives who are going through similar situations that are about to give up or whatever. I'm someone that's been through a lot in my life. With illness and other situations, but this was a blessing just to hear this show. I'm so thankful that we have this station so that we can hear things that are positive and things that are educational and hear some views of substance. So thank you both for, I never called in and nothing like that. And, I'm a young guy and I can listen to any station, but I choose to listen to something that can empower me. So, you both have empowered me today, and your station always empowers and educates. So, thank you all very much.
Thank you for the call, Ed, and for the nice words. We're very impressed and flattered by that. I speak for myself.
Exactly. Yeah. And Ed, you be encouraged and know that though your yesterday may have not been that good, your today can be much, much better, and your tomorrow can be even better.
We're grateful for your call, Ed. Let's take one from Ron calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Ron.
Hi, Chantel. I just happened to be listening to the radio station, 9.07, and I was totally inspired by your testimony. I do prison ministry in the state prison, and I just want to say that I have a Christian worldview, and I believe that the greatest distinction between us is light and darkness. I believe that Christ is the only way to a true change of nature. So I probably would say that differently as whatever works for you. I believe there's only one way that works, and that's Christ. But let me say this. My first time in the prison system some years ago, I was just utterly shocked at the number of African-American men, that disproportionate number. No, we read about it, but to see it really rocked my world. And though I have this greatest distinction of light and darkness, I have a peripheral eye on my people to say something is truly very wrong. Can you speak to those negative dynamics where you've probably seen that disproportionately, even from a woman's standpoint, and what leads into it and how it stews in the prison system itself? Can you speak to that somewhat?
Well, there is a disparity. That's known. That's widely known that there is a disparity, but that still is no excuse. We as a black race, an African-American race, need to just make a decision that we're no longer going to be victims, but that we're going to be victors, and we need to unify so that we as a culture can start supporting our people, and being there and giving them the guidance and the nurturing that they need to be successful people in society.
There is a dialogue that has begun,
yes.
Quite frankly, begun since the Michael Brown shooting mm-hmm. in Ferguson, where things like this are being discussed more openly.
Right.
And, a lot of people, I expect yourself, would be saying it's about time that mm-hmm. we have this discussion
exactly.
and really expand it.
Exactly.
Well, put somebody on the line now who is a state representative who may be able to help do something about some of the things we've been talking about. Representative Gina Mitten from Richmond Heights joins us by phone. Thank you so much for being with us. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Well, what do you think?
Well, what I was interested in hearing your guest speak to is Missouri's policy about expunging criminal records. And when speaking about policy change that we need in order to have those who have convictions to get back on track, as your guest has so amply demonstrated, it is an inspiration to us all. Missouri has very difficult, if not impossible, laws about expunging records so that folks that do serve their time well and get back on track are able to readjust and reacclimate within the working world. And I'm curious about your guest's comments on that.
Well, I have been following that. Jay Nixon has been so gracious as to enact an expungement thing law after an offender has been off supervision for 20 years, which for me, that's no of no benefit. And so I am actively seeking out someone who can help me generate support for enacting a new policy and law that would allow people that come out and they are examples of reformation to be able to go back sooner than 20 years to have their records expunged. Like on basically on a case by case basis, as opposed to again, like I go back to grouping us as a group of ex offenders and saying that once you meet these criteria, then you can do this, but more so looking at it on an individual basis.
Representative Minton, where is the legislature now in looking at things like this with regard to prison reform and some of the things we've discussed?
Well, Senator Dixon did file a bill, and I couldn't tell you the bill number last year that did get a hearing, but I do not believe it was voted out of committee. I filed House Bill 1200 that is, it's the equivalent of expungement to the extent that it seals the records, except for to law enforcement, that had broad-based support, but that bill unfortunately did not even receive a hearing this last legislative session.
Well, that's unfortunate. Right, so we'll
how
see.
How can I connect with you, state representative?
I don't know how the producers deal with that, but you can certainly look me up, and I'm happy to make contact.
Just stay on the line, if you would, representative, and our screener will get in contact information. We'll pass it along. Okay.
And if one more thing, if I could just real briefly, I'm curious to know about your experience through your foundation work of what these ex-offenders are going through because we don't have any good policy on this level in the state of Missouri.
The main challenge that I see in the ex-offenders is employment, which is like the number one stipulation of probation or parole. But that's where they face the major challenges. So that's the biggest challenge that I see.
We'll get you two together, and you can get your heads together and talk this over. Thank you for your call. One final call now from Tim. Tim, we've only got a few seconds, so make it quick, please.
Cool. I just wanted to, support you guys on your work you're doing. I am an ex-felon myself. I've been out for 5 years, and I'm finishing up my master's at UMSL. And I'm doing it mainly because I had issues with gaining employment when I first got out, and I'm hoping that this is going to counterbalance that. Mm-hmm.
It definitely will, Tim. That's what I was sharing with Don before the show, is that education is one way that you can, like, stump out your ex-offender, because when they sign the checks on my scholarship, they never once asked me, oh, by the way, are you an ex-offender? They just look at my record, my academic record, and sign the check on the dotted line.
Education and jobs,
yes.
Two key components
for
resolving many of the issues
yes.
you've talked about today. Chantel Fisher, thank you so much for being with us. We wish you the very best of luck. You've got a great future ahead of you, I'm sure.
Thanks for having me, Don.
It's been our pleasure. Mm-hmm. Chantel Fisher. Coming up, Love in Love. I'll explain that in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.